Raised Rowdy.
Guys, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm Nick Tressler and our special guest. I say ours, it's just me here. Mr. Slade Coulter, thanks for being here, brother.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I know we often get lucky to see you sometimes when you're in town.
Yeah.
We got lucky enough to have you pop up a few of our events. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're doing a sick whiskey jam this week, too.
Yeah, man. It's like a Dreamer Showcase, which is our management group that we're with. And yeah, it's just all my homies.
So
we all kind of came from town together and gonna have a good time tonight.
It's gonna be sick. We love Whiskey Jam. I actually have a Whiskey Jam tattoo.
Oh, that's sick. Dude, I'm gonna say this is my first one. I've never been to one before.
Yeah. You're gonna have a great time, man. It's cool. Ward and the gang are great, and they built a very cool thing. I mean, part of the inspiration of why we do what we do, you know?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's sick. So I know you've gotten to pop in and play with us in Nashville. How long have you been making it up this way?
Really, like, consistently for a couple years.
Yeah.
I'd come up, like, once or twice before that, but nothing of real importance. Really,
yeah.
Just to come to town and, you know,
see
if something magic happens. You know, yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. And but really, in the last couple years, it's been more, like, you know, on the business side of things, come up and do writes and take meetings and try to do things the right way. So
yeah, it's always interesting too. I mean, for a long time it felt like the Red Dirt Texas like scene was anti Nashville.
For sure.
And then some people started to embrace it. I mean, there's always been some embracing of it, but I feel like now the move, like what you're talking about, coming up with stuff in mind to accomplish or like to get rights with cool people, build some relationships is always a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Sometimes I feel like being here, of course, is important, but you don't need to live here as an artist,
right?
To do that, and I feel like that also kind of gives you the firepower to write songs about where you're from, and you know what I mean, like just have everything that's, you know, what everyone's talking or doing in town.
Yeah, so. For sure. And it's funny you mentioned that, like the whole anti-Nashville thing. Because, I mean, like, it for a while it did feel like that. Like, it felt like the Texas scene and the Nashville scene were, like, enemies or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's kind of easy to feel that way when you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, you start coming to town and you meet really cool people that are incredibly talented and write some awesome songs. And it's like, it's not so bad up here, you know?
Yeah. I love Nashville, of course. It is community. You
yeah,
know? Like,
for sure.
There's infrastructure here.
Yeah.
Right? Of course. Like, where else are labels and management companies and booking agencies all in the same spot with one of the best collections of songwriters that's ever existed on the planet, you know,
for sure. And that's the thing, like, that's another thing you learn is, like, you know, the more successful you get in the music business, like, all roads lead here, whether you want them to or not.
Yeah. even like band guys, you know what I mean? There's just this, if you're gonna get opportunity,
yeah,
and it's not like homegrown, right?
Yeah.
But I will say, like, there's something to the Texas scene too,
for sure. Yeah,
it's the ability for an artist to be able to drive within 4 hours of their house in a circle and make a living doing it doesn't exist many other places.
No, you can, I mean, you can tour Texas for the rest of your life and make a living doing it. And there's a bunch of people that do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's weird. It's the culture there is very supportive of live music and of, like, young songwriters and, like, especially coming up in Lubbock, which is where I live.
Yeah.
Like, and having the Blue Light, which is, I mean, promotes songwriters more than any venue I know of.
100%.
You know? And, it's kind of a culture thing. Like, people want to come out and see original music there.
Yeah.
And I think that's why there's so many bands that come out of Texas, too.
Agree. It's, it seems like right now it's, like, hard for artists to cut their teeth. More so than it's been since I've been paying attention. And venues like the Blue Light, where it's not just even the full band, like, they actually embrace songwriting and the culture. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I always say you're never going to see this outside of Nashville, but that's not true, because the Blue Light, you see stuff that you see would only see in Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, on a weekly basis down there. There's still places that are havens for art.
Absolutely.
And it's powerful, you know.
And I mean, it's the whole, like, rise of social media and it's kind of a double-edged sword because it's, I mean, it's easier now than ever to gain a following. Mm-hmm. But I, like you said, it's harder now than ever to like go out and actually tour, and just like the price of everything is so expensive now.
100%.
And, yeah, it's weird. It's a weird time, but, yeah, with the power of social media and stuff, I mean,
you can get it to people.
Yeah.
It's just how, one of the things I was like talking about was like, how do you get someone from being someone that when your song's on, they like it? Mm-hmm. You know, if they happen upon it, to someone that goes out and searches for it.
Right.
You know, and will drive 2 hours when they see you playing. Yep. You know, and like, I think that's the interesting part of the social media thing is how can you craft an experience or like a song hitting home so much that it turns someone from being, oh, I like Slade Calder, to, oh, I want to go see him play.
Right.
You know, every time he's around, I want to see him play.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like probably the biggest challenge I can think of now.
For sure. Yeah. It's a tough challenge. And especially like we still play a ton in Texas because like it's our moneymaker.
Yeah. You know? Why wouldn't you?
And yeah, it's weird. And especially because like I grew up in a town of like 500 people, like middle of nowhere. And I feel like that's a huge portion of our following is like kids in these super rural areas.
Yeah.
Because we go around and play like all the small town rodeos and county fairs and stuff like that. But then like when we play in the bigger cities, like those people will drive from those rural areas to come see us.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool, but it's a whole scene down there.
Yeah. I love it. I haven't gotten to explore Texas too much. I've been there a few times now, but, I've been a big fan of the scene for a long time. When I was back in Western Pennsylvania, there was a radio station that played Red Dirt music on Sunday nights.
Oh, cool.
And my buddy Jackson was like the DJ of it. So it was called Red Dirt Revival. And it was like, it's funny because it's not reviving there. It's like ground bubbling up. You know?
Yeah.
But, and his love for Red Dirt music made me love it even more. You know,
I'd
already seen Turnpike and I, you know, loved it and I'd searched out artists, but, you know, listening to guys like Dalton Domino and
for sure
just folks that maybe didn't get national acclaim.
Yeah.
But had some, I mean, that July, freaking come on, you know? Yeah,
great.
And then getting to meet someone like Ray Wiley Hubbard and, you know, how big he is if you know who he is, but
for sure,
you know, that so many people that are large country music fans have no idea, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, like the songs, oftentimes they're more meaningful when they come from your area. And I feel like, I got a heavy, heavy nostalgia drip from your most recent release, Crown Victoria.
Yeah. Good. That's what we were going for.
Yeah. It was, my parents had a Crown Victoria. They had a couple of them.
So you lived it.
Yeah. So it was almost like you were writing that song to me, you know, yeah. As weird as that is, you know, like, the seats, the, you know, the bench seats and we didn't have enough money for a Cadillac, but we had enough money for a Crown Vic, you know?
Heck yeah.
Why don't we talk a little bit about that song? Like you said, it's just drenched in nostalgia.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we're going for. I wrote that one with my buddy Travis Roberts, the guy that just dropped me off in that van outside. Yeah. He's an incredible songwriter.
Yeah.
And me and him write together a lot. And we do a songwriter's retreat every year at this place called Hotel Turkey down in Texas, which is, Turkey is a town of like, I don't know, 200 people or something. And it's this old, like 100-year-old hotel just in the middle of nowhere. And there's nothing to do there except write songs.
That's great.
So they put us up for a week down there, just like our whole group of like 10 or 12 songwriters, and feed us and give us all the beer we want for a week and let us just write songs out there. So that's where we came up with that one. And it's weird the different ways that songs come to life, because a lot of time you'll have like a melody in mind, or it'll start with a guitar lick, or that was when Travis just threw out the first line of that song. Damn, I was dumb to come to your doorstep. I was like, oh, that's cool. Let's just roll with that. And, just kind of built the song out of nowhere. built a story out of nowhere. But, you know, the more it evolved, like once we got the first verse done and stuff, is like you could feel like it's a very nostalgic feeling.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's kind of what we geared the rest of the song around.
It's so cool. And it's like, you know, that young lust. You say love, but it's not love.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, for sure. What you think is love when you're that young, yep. You know? And, you know, the cars used to be built for being in them longer, you know?
For sure. For sure.
So it was a little bit easier.
I don't know if you see how big I am. Yeah. It ain't happening in a Camry, that's
no.
for sure.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the bench seat is good for more things than just driving down the road and getting close to each other, you know?
For sure.
So it's like, it just feels, and the production on it too, feels, you know?
Yeah.
There's rock and roll chorus, like in most of the stuff that you
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the... And it's a little, I don't know, muddy or swampy. I don't know the best way to describe some of the guitar play on it.
A lot of that is our producer, Josh Serrato.
Yeah.
He's Coe's full-time guitar player.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the guy's just incredible. Like, as far as guitar sounds and making the music match the story and stuff like that, helping us, you know, craft the guitar tones and guitar parts for it. And because it was a song. I really, really loved the song when we wrote it.
Yeah.
But then, like, once we took it to the studio and recorded it, it was like, come on, man.
So good.
Yeah.
Like, I saw it pop up on my stream, and I was like, I love the name, first of all, because my parents had that. And then I listened to it, and I was like, oh, God. I felt it in my veins, you know?
Well, good, man. Thank you.
That's one of the coolest things about songs, is you guys crafted this story from wherever it came from, but there's people like... dumb 44-year-old me that it feels like home to, you know?
Yeah, and that's what you're going for as a songwriter, you know? You want to make people feel what you feel.
Yep.
And that's the cool thing about music.
I know, it's great. Yeah. And then the most recent one before that's Lucky.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that a little bit as well?
For sure. That was, we as a band have the worst luck imaginable, like on the road when it comes to vehicles and stuff. We're without a touring vehicle right now, which is why we rode up here with Travis and in the back of his van.
Yeah.
We travel around in like a big RV. It's down for the count now, it's done. But, it was also out this particular weekend, with something. It was in the shop, one of its million problems. And, our buddy Tanner Ustry, he said, "Hey man, I've got a van you can use." And awesome, appreciate it, man. So he had, you know, a Chevy 15 passenger van like that. And we had some shows in like Kansas and Nebraska and went up and played them and had to be back in Texas the next morning for, we're playing a rodeo down there. And so we had to drive through the night from Omaha to wherever we were going. Lo and behold, his van breaks down on us. And somewhere in the middle of Kansas, middle of the night, I don't even know what happened to it, but, we were just stranded on the side of the road, like 4 a.m. And, you know, none of us are good enough mechanics to fix it on the spot. And so we just sat and wrote a song about it on the side of the road.
Love it.
And that was the first single off the record. So
it's super cool. I mean, again, like you can feel those two songs specifically, like you can see them as like the same kind of project, you know what I mean? You
for
hear
sure.
Sonically, I mean, it's not super different than the stuff you've done in the past, but they sound like they're cousins, you know what I mean?
For sure.
So you said record. Why don't we talk about that?
Yeah.
Like, you have a full project on the way?
Full project on the way.
Nice.
I think we're gonna drop one or two more singles.
Yeah.
And then do like a, you know, late fall release for the record.
Sick. And so, you got it all done already?
Got it all done already, yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, we recorded it with Serrato over in Cisco, Texas.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite project by far that we've done yet.
Well, I love the singles that we've gotten so far, so I'm very excited to hear the rest
of it. Awesome, man. Well, I'll send you a few.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's one of the coolest parts about our job. I remember someone saying, like, Trigger from Saving Country Music doesn't like getting music before it comes out. I'm like, that's literally my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, like I love people talk about like demo jail. Have you heard that term?
Brother.
Yeah. I'm like, I kind of love being in demo jail.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the situation.
Right. For sure.
There's been a lot of times like after shows.
Yeah.
Like there's a few weeks ago, like some lady came up to me after and was like, listen to this. And just shoving her phone in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a loud bar. I can't hear anything. It's like, oh, great.
Cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my version is different. I get it on my phone and I get to listen to it when I want to.
Yeah, for sure.
Why don't we talk about, like you said, like the vehicles breaking down, right? I mean, that's such a part of touring, and that's such a part of figuring out how to make this thing make enough money so you can keep doing it.
For sure.
I know other people that have had like RVs, and it's wild because like RVs really aren't made to be touring vehicles. You know, they're built
so cheaply.
Yeah, they're made to drive to one spot, stop, stay there for a week, go home for 6 months.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's crazy. So everything was falling apart on that on that vehicle. But yeah, it's an unfortunate part of touring, and especially like we live in Lubbock.
Yeah.
Which is like 6 hours from everything.
Yeah.
And so we put a lot of miles on vehicles.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been, you know, when we first started, we were just, you know, taking a couple trucks around, loading stuff up in the back, and then bought a Sprinter van, and it's been in the shop for two and a half years now.
Yeah.
It had some problem that like even the dealership doesn't know what's wrong with it. They're still trying to figure out what's wrong with it. So then moved from that back to trucks till we found another vehicle. Got this RV, been in that for a couple of years, and now it's just everything on it's falling apart.
Yeah, too much to fix to get it back to.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like you said, they're built to be used like twice a year and go sit in a spot for a week. And, you know, we're putting several hundred or a thousand miles on it every weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, with six grown men in there, and we're pretty hard on vehicles.
Makes sense. I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
It's nice to have those vehicles that you can kind of crash in, because hotels are expensive too.
Yeah. And that was, you know, that was the goal for that. It was like, sick. We can just have beds and park anywhere and sleep there, which in theory sounds awesome.
Right.
And then, you know, turns out the repair bills for an RV like outweigh hotel costs by quite a bit. So.
Yeah. It's always an interesting thing. It's like, you know, one way or the other, you're going to spend money either way.
Yeah.
It's just
no
when
way
you want to spend it. Yeah. When you guys are doing shows, like, I know like a lot of like people talk about like casino shows, right?
So
casino shows will pay a little bit more to kind of get you routed. Is there anything like, I know you talked about the rodeos. Are rodeos kind of like that? Are they like slightly better pay, sometimes the same?
I mean, a lot of the times sometimes they're really good. It kind of depends on where you go.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's really no different than a club show.
Yeah.
Or anything. Similar. It's just outdoor.
Yeah.
It's just 110 degrees and
right. In Texas.
In Texas.
What a.
But they're fun, and that's a huge part of our fan base is kind of that crowd.
Yeah.
Because like I said, growing up in like a small West Texas town, you know, everybody out there does rodeo, it feels like.
Yeah.
And it's cool because even if people like don't listen to us there, like they discover us there and start listening to us there.
Because
a lot of time, like the rodeo crowd and like the red dirt fans, you know, it's the same people.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a big party every time, every show, whether they know us or not, you know, they're going to have a good time. So,
I don't have that culture, of course. Like they're, you know, Western Pennsylvania, there's not many rodeos.
Yeah, for sure.
But, that's kind of how I feel like festivals for me. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I love a festival because it's like an experience. I feel like a rodeo is the same way. It's like, it's all of the people there are living that lifestyle. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, maybe comparable to like NASCAR, but even more because.
For sure.
NASCAR, you're not really racing cars. All the people aren't racing cars.
It's like
cars.
Nobody's involved.
Right.
They're there to watch, but.
Right.
A lot of the times it's like the people at rodeos are family of the rodeo contestants.
Yeah.
Or, you know, young kids who are. You know,
trying it and
I love
that.
It's a cool culture. It really is.
It's a, you talk about like lifestyle and lifestyle brands and rodeo is a lifestyle, you know,
for sure. And it's not all that different from like playing music for a living.
No, it makes sense.
It's like loading up and spending a ton of money to drive across the country and maybe make some money, maybe not.
Yeah. It's all a gamble.
You're gonna have a good time regardless. So
yeah, that's cool. It's a, do you guys do anything like on site for like trying to get people's phone numbers or emails or anything like that while you're doing that?
I mean, not particularly. We do have like we try to push it through our socials. Like we have like email lists and stuff where we try to give people early access to projects and and cool stuff like that. But like on site at venues, not much. Not really.
That's always a thing that I'm like, as we get more into events, I'm like, how could we figure out a way to get these artists that are playing that hopefully are making new fans access to those fans? Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So that when you're back in Odessa, Texas, you know, you could tell someone, and if you're not playing the rodeo, you could have a venue there or something, you know what I mean? And get a hold of those people. I don't know if I have the correct answer yet. And it's always like weird stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Like legality wise.
Yeah. And but, I mean, I don't know if there is a right answer that it's and a lot of times it's you've got to go back to the same place, like, you know, two or three times before people start remembering you and people like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Cause they got to kind of build a couple rapport beers with them. In.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
And then it's, oh yeah, I love this guy. Oh, I really love this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting part of it too. Is like, you know, how do you get those people? Is it three shows? Is it five shows?
Mm-hmm.
How do you service that community enough that they believe in you?
For sure.
I remember someone saying, hey, if you have 12 markets or 10 markets that you can sell a good number of tickets in twice a year, you can make a living doing this.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, I forget who told me that or who said it, but I don't know if the math is exactly the same now.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it depends on how good those markets are.
Right. And cost of stuff's up, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that's like, it's where you decide to spend your time, hopefully will pay you back, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like Texas does a better job of that than anywhere. I mean, you guys have your own kind of radio network too. You know what I mean? It's not just the shit you hear on traditional mainstream country radio. You still have that. But you have like the Texas Red Dirt radio stations.
For sure.
You know, and that can help take a song from being a good song to like they feel like it's a part of their ecosystem almost.
For sure. You know? And it's like the camaraderie of the Texas scene is a super cool part of it too.
Yeah.
Cuz you know, I mean you've got the festivals like Steamboat or Mile Zero or LJT or it's like anytime you're on those like big festivals with a ton of other artists that are all other Texas guys. Like, it's like you go there and it's all your buddies.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like once you're in, you're in. And like, once you become friends with a bunch of these people, I don't know. It just feels different down there. Like playing shows with your buddies as opposed to like, I don't know, going across the country and hopping on and being an opening act for somebody you don't know that's not going to come out and talk to you. And
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like there, you just go hang out backstage for a while and, you know, shoot the shit until the show. And it's cool.
I love that.
And super thankful to be a part of that scene. And
yeah. Who are some of the guys that, you know, as you were doing this thing that you kind of felt like were good to you and they didn't need to be, or, you know, have any stories like that?
Yeah, man. I mean, really, like, there's not many that aren't that way. Like, there's a couple that aren't that I won't name names because I don't want to start beef with anybody, but for the most part, everybody's super welcoming. You know, like Wade Bowen, Randy Rogers, like those guys are like idols of mine growing up, because in Texas growing up there, you know every word to every song. And so like the first time playing shows with both those guys, super nice to us. Same thing with like Co and Parker McCollum. And I mean, they're all just like regular laid back dudes. Like, people get this idea in their head, you know, about how people are going to be before you meet them. And then you meet them and it's like, they're just regular people and they're cool people and they're laid back and they're nice and welcoming. And I mean, there's really not many that I've met that aren't that way.
I love that.
Which especially like in the Texas scene. But yeah, it's, I mean, there's too many to name, really.
Yeah.
There's so many nice guys down there.
No, I mean, that's great to hear, honestly. And I mean, that's what you want, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely.
We always talk about the community here, and, you know, I think it's heavily on the songwriting, where it's like you're writing with buddies and, you know, high tide raises all ships. But I feel like Texas is the best statement of, like, we support our own.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It almost feels like it's like its own country inside the country, you know, like historically.
Yeah, 100%.
Not even just in the music world, you know, but.
And now there's more like crossover than ever between Texas and Nashville. Cause it's like, I don't know. I feel like that long running beef or whatever you want to call it is like squashed. Cause, I mean, everybody comes up here to write. There's a bunch of people like up here, go down there to tour now.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're all doing the same thing.
100%.
You know what I mean? But yeah, Texas, that was kind of the difference between the two that I noticed off the bat is like here it is heavily, heavily, heavily focused on songwriting and like, you know, trying to write a hit. There's Texas. It's like, the live show.
Yeah.
It's based on touring.
Yeah.
Which I mean, both are cool and they both have their own place, but like, that's kind of the difference that I've noticed, like when I come up here to write with people, is like a lot of people are like writing for a cut.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, which is really cool. And like, it's not necessarily what I'm super interested in. It's like,
right.
I want to write songs to play to people.
Yeah.
To play in the live show. So
it's an interesting thing too. I mean, of course, like as an artist writing music, you're hoping that every song you write could be a song that's an expression of you.
For sure.
Speaks to your fans and speaks to you. Whereas like if someone's a professional songwriter, they're not releasing music.
Right.
They want the song to get to as many ears as possible.
For sure. And like, I completely understand that.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. And like absolutely nothing against writing for cuts.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to have a couple myself, but,
yeah.
Like my main priority going into a write is like, how is this going to sound on stage? How's this going to come across to a crowd?
Yeah.
Will this resonate with, you know, our crowd back home? Will this resonate with the crowds we play to on the road?
Yeah.
That's kind of just my thoughts, like, when writing.
And so. Honestly, I think, I mean, having interviewed as many people as we do, it's like, we hear that from other artists, too. It's like,
yeah.
I remember having Dylan Marlowe.
Yeah.
Kind of early in his, like, label career, and he was just getting out in clubs. And he's like, man, I have songs that I love, but they're kind of slow.
Yep.
So it's like he knew at that time he needed some more upbeat songs because that's what the live show needed.
For sure.
You know? I think there's something to be said for that too. I got to chat this week with like Ashley McBride.
Oh, cool.
And at the festival we were at. And she's just a songwriter, man.
Yeah.
And artist too. And the way she steers the audience and just has them in the palm of her hand.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to her and she's like, yeah, but that's because I played hundreds of shows and learned how to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. And her audience at that festival was the crowd was shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all eyes up paying attention.
Dude, and that is my favorite thing to see. Like,
so cool.
Especially, there's just like certain people that just like really have a knack for that. Like can go into like any like the rowdiest clubs in the country and just shut the whole place down.
Yeah.
Like make everybody just super quiet and focused on the stage, and it's super cool to see.
It is. And then she riled them back up right after.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's why I always talk about like the best shows are like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know? If you get a long enough set, if it's not that long, it's a sprint. But, you know, it's ups and downs. And I mean, that's art too. Placing those things in the right way and what you say in between each song and how you can make sure that in 15 seconds between you talking between the two songs while everybody's tuning up, like, can you say something that's impactful and make sure they listen to the next track?
Dude. And that's like why I'm such a big fan of like Todd Snyder.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've listened to much Todd Snyder, but he was one of those people that can just shut a place up.
Yeah.
But like most of the crowd comes for the stories, you know?
Yeah.
Just as much for the stories as they do the songs.
I love that.
And he was more of a storyteller than anything, I feel like.
I gotta dig into that.
Oh, it's incredible. Hilarious too. So funny.
I think that's so interesting too. I mean, you know, as a songwriter, you're of course a wordsmith, right? Like,
yeah.
There's that's the art, you know, mm-hmm. and the little things that people say, and how you can make, because you got 50, you can't talk for 3 minutes in between your 3 minute songs, you know,
right?
But yeah. In some shows you can, depending on how they are,
for
but,
sure.
You know, not on a festival stage or a rodeo, you know. Yeah. So it's always like, how do you make the thing, the point that you want to have, concise enough to be consumable, memorable mm-hmm. enough to make sure that they either remember it or at least pay attention to what you want them to pay attention to. You
yeah.
know? It's do you find yourself like in between songs, like trying to work out what you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, cause it's a huge part of the set.
Yeah.
And like the last thing you want in a set is awkward silence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so sometimes it's just like, it's one line. Sometimes it's a little story about the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a constant learning thing. Like we don't have it perfected by any means, but you know, we've got something a little bit figured out, like, okay, I need to talk between these songs cause we don't have a transition from this song to this song. And this will give everybody time to tune.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite parts of it though, is like learning how to build a whole set and build a whole performance as opposed to just a list of songs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's so important. I think those are the details that make someone go from, man, this band's great, I'm glad they're here, to I want to go see them again.
Live. Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's experience. And mm-hmm. as we evolve with AI and, you know, all of the things that's happening everywhere, it's like that experience is still real. Mm-hmm. That experience is still something that when it happens, like, it's going to be hard for AI to give you goosebumps, you know, in the back of your neck.
For sure.
You know, I'm not saying it will never happen, but yeah. like, I think we've got some time, you know?
Yeah.
That's the part that I think that people are craving even more now when yep. everything feels so noisy
mm-hmm.
and life is, you know, my parents see a video of like, animal online and I'm like, that's not real.
Yeah.
They're like, what do you mean it's not real? Yeah. You know, like, they're 80s, you know. I think everybody's going to be more cautious with what is, but what really is intimate sentiment and songs, I think, is like the art of it is what, yeah, will last, absolutely, forever.
And like, yeah, there's a lot of advancements and stuff with AI, but like, it'll never be able to replicate like somebody who's a good performer and a good storyteller, just them and an acoustic guitar that can shut up a whole room. And that to me is like, I don't know, like the true test of an artist almost. Cause I mean, full band shows are awesome. They're my favorite to play, but like, if it's just you and an acoustic guitar, like, can you make it work?
Gotta have the goods.
Can you do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those are some of my favorite sets I've ever seen too. It's just like some of my favorite artists I've got to watch just acoustic in a quiet room, and it's magical. Yeah. You know,
I always talk about that too. Like even with Matt, I mean, of course, like we have full band showcase and we have writers rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel more tied to the writers rounds.
Yeah.
And we do like a series at the writers round where it's like they shut the bar up.
Yeah.
God, those moments.
Yeah.
You know, when there's too many people at the local and someone just shuts it up. Like Joy Beth Taylor, who's like one of Ella Langley's frequent co-writers.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I watched her shut Live Oak up so many times.
Yep.
With just her words and a guitar. And she isn't the loudest singer, you know?
Right.
It's just, you have to pay attention. It's when someone can do that, it's wild, you know?
For sure. And I mean, all it takes is like, a lot of times it's like, you know, the first song, it'll be like a single line that you hear or something that just shuts up the whole place immediately.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. And those are like a lot of the times my favorite shows to play too.
Yeah.
Or just like the intimate acoustic rooms and like listening room style stuff.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a sucker for slow songs too.
Yeah.
And like sad songs. And I want to make people feel something.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. I love going into a rowdy club and getting the place riled up and playing some rock and roll songs, but yep. It's hard to beat just a quiet room and people focused on the music and appreciating the music.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. There's just something about it.
We help like bring a couple people to the Floribama. I don't know if you know the Floribama, but it is one of the rowdiest bars on the planet. But they have a songwriters festival called Frank Brown Songwriters Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to see a bar like that bar that is literally always rowdy.
Yep.
Really embrace the songs and pay attention.
For sure.
And we've been to QS Songwriters Festival and
yep.
But I mean, that's the writer's round experience at somewhere cool, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the same thing. I mean, to keep bringing up the Blue Light.
Yeah.
I mean, it's our home bar. It's my favorite bar in the world.
Yeah.
But like most of the time it is a rowdy, rowdy place. But every Monday night they have songwriter night. And once a year they have their songwriter competition. And in both of those, it's, you know, they shut the place up. Like, you're not allowed to talk in there. You're there to listen to the music. You're going to shut up and be respectful and listen to these songwriters. And a ton of people come out to listen.
I love it.
It's awesome.
There's something about music that heals people. And
yeah, absolutely.
A loud, raucous song can do it, but those sad, slow, impactful to you makes it impactful to other people's songs are the ones that really move the needle.
Dude, and that's my favorite compliment, like, that I've gotten from people is, like, when they come up and say, like, this song got me through this.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this song helped me get through this breakup or, you know, this family member passing away or whatever. And it's like, wow, like, you really made a difference in this person's life.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just somebody being like, I like this song. It's like, you know, this song helps me get through the hardest points of my life. It's like,
yeah,
the biggest compliment you can get as a songwriter. Because, I mean, a lot of the times, like, especially the slow, sad stuff, is written, like, from the heart and, you know, from things that I've lived. And a lot of times you feel, like, alone in those feelings. But, I mean, the more you get your music out there, it's like, wow, there's a lot of people that have felt this exact same thing.
Yeah.
And it's cool to connect with people over that kind of thing, you know?
I think it's, for me, like, that's why music's always been such a powerful part of my life, is connection. Whether it's, I mean, I had brothers that were significantly older than me.
Yeah.
Who, you know, we're almost like parent age gap, right?
Yeah.
And watching them love music made me love it even more.
For sure.
You know, and then same thing, like, with my parents and friends, you know, you make, in my opinion, you make the best friends over shared love of music.
Absolutely, know? Yeah.
That becomes your people, your family.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Well, what else do we have to look forward to for the record? Is it sonically? Is it like a little bit both happy and you know, like, what's the vibe?
It's a little of both. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah,
it's pretty heavy feeling record.
Cool.
Which again is like, I tend to lean into the emotional side of music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some upbeat, some feel good songs on there, but sonically it's, you know, it's definitely more like Crown Vic, like a nostalgic, heavy kind of rockin' feel, which I mean is some of my favorite kind of music.
Yeah.
So
feels good. I feel like rock and roll is having a upswing again.
For sure.
You know,
there's a huge resurgence of it right now.
Yeah. And it's like, it's interesting to me too. It's, you know, I'm hearing all the country acts, you know, this Blue Dot Fever, right? Like, that's the big ones. But these clubs, like, aren't booking club shows too, you know?
Right.
But I went and watched Cigarettes at Sunset.
Yeah.
Sell out, I don't know, 600 cap room, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So there's still music fans going to seeing live shows.
For sure.
It's just like slightly shaking up what it sounds like that's making them come, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like, and rock and roll's coming back.
It's, yeah. And that's another thing, like the Red Dirt scene is, it's not one kind of music either.
Yeah.
It's kind of all over the place because you got, you know, like a super like 90s country feel and stuff.
Yep.
You'll have them on the same bill with a hard rock band.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, everybody's still all buddies down there and still all playing the same festivals. And
100%.
It's cool. And there's, I mean, a huge crossover between those crowds. A lot of the people that are down there listening to the classic country stuff also love the rock and roll stuff. So,
yep. I think that's such a cool thing about like what the Red Dirt scene has had over the years is like, I mean, like if you think about Ragweed, right?
Yeah.
Like there was rock in that.
You know,
heavy rock.
For sure.
And that's kind of co-leaned in that world.
Yeah.
You know,
they were kind of the first ones to bring that like, the heavy rock sound to the country scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And as a guy from Western Pennsylvania, I knew a little cross Canadian ragweed, but I didn't know how much they meant to that area.
Oh, dude. Royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Texas, Oklahoma, that whole, like, I grew up listening to ragweed nonstop.
Mm.
And I mean, that's another funny thing about kind of growing up and getting out of Texas and learning about the other scenes. It's like you go places and you realize like people outside didn't grow up listening to ragweed or Randy Rogers or Turnpike or, you know, it's like, oh wow, I thought this was like popular everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And thankfully, like with the crossover of Texas and Nashville, especially like in the last decade, like their music is more popular than ever now too. So it's cool to see, you know, the stuff that was like triple platinum to us kind of making it to the rest of the country. And
yeah,
so it's cool to see.
I think it's super cool. And I mean, it makes me think back to stumbling upon a Joe's on Weed Street show of Turnpike Troubadours and American Aquarium. And my brain expanding that day.
Yeah. You know,
we were like, we got to go to shows at Joe's while we're in Chicago. Who's this Turnpike Troubadour? Oh my God. Listened to it and was like, what have I been doing my whole life? You know? And then that opened the door for me trying to explore everything I could that was adjacent to it.
Yeah.
You know,
100%.
That was my gateway drug was Turnpike Troubadours.
Yep.
And the fever that you felt at their live show, you know, and God bless Ed Warm for putting that in Chicago so that I got to see it. You know,
for sure.
Cause I'd never been to Texas then. I'd never been to Oklahoma, you know, but the music made it to Chicago when I was up there to see a hockey game.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah. And that music became some of the most impactful music to me as a fan.
Yeah.
You know, you think you kind of know what you like, and then you hear something that completely changes your idea of.
Yeah, dude. And it's like, I don't know. To me, it's just like that kind of stuff is impossible not to like.
Yeah.
Like the with Evan Felker, like his songwriting. And I mean, just the whole band arrangement. And I mean, it's just, it's magical.
It is.
It's magical. Like, I remember the first time hearing it, like the Diamonds and Gasoline record.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my God. Like, this is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, from there, like, finding Reckless Kelly, who has, like, unlimited albums.
Yeah.
And dude, sonically so different, some of them than others, mm-hmm. and songs that are, and just, like, hearing Wicked Twisted Road. And just feeling it inside of my soul.
Yeah. And it's, you know? Again, it's the same thing. Like, that's the stuff I grew up on.
Mm.
Like for my earliest memories, it was like, you know, listening to all those guys. And yeah, it's just, it's crazy to me that like other people grew up not knowing them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I didn't realize that it was such a like enclosed ecosystem at the time. But again, like, I'm glad it's not that way anymore.
100%. And honestly, there's power to it doing that. Like, when I was a kid, I thought the biggest band on the planet was the Clarks. They were from Pittsburgh, and they were the Pittsburgh rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, they were the biggest thing on the planet. You know, to a kid that grew up in the same hometown as him, the lead singer, they were, you know? And that was the first concerts we went to.
Mm-hmm.
All of us. Everyone.
That's,
you know,
pretty cool.
Because they'd play.
Yeah.
And so we got to see them, and their biggest thing that ever happened was they played on Letterman one time. But they toured regionally forever. They're still, it's 40 years later, they're still making music and playing shows. You know, it's crazy. But
it's wild.
That's, you guys have that in spades in Texas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that. I've been thinking a lot recently about the hometown hero.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's almost like a weird thing that of course you want a national audience and you want to grow it as big as you can.
Yeah.
But like, if you take care of the people that took care of you first, mm-hmm. you can do it for a lot longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, that's
again, there's guys that have toured for 40 years in Texas.
100%.
And never left Texas.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. No. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. Just got to figure it out. And like thinking about, I think it was, he sold, maybe it was the first rodeo he sold out, Cody Johnson.
Yeah.
And then watching him go to Ohio and play a 600 cap room,
mm-hmm.
like right after he sold out the freaking rodeo for the first time. But you have to, that's what a Texas artist has to do. I'm sure he lost money that whole tour.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. But, and that's the beauty of playing live music too. Like 100%. We've played, like it's hilarious. We've gotten the chance to do like a few arena shows with people, you know, as an opening act or direct support. And it's crazy because you play to 15,000 people one night, and then the next night you'll be in a club playing to 15 people that aren't listening.
Yeah.
And it's like up and down, roller up and coaster. Down. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like an ego check, you know?
Oh, for sure. It's like, don't get too comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. No, sometimes that's good, I guess, you know? It'd be better if it never happened. But
yeah, for sure.
It keeps you grateful for when it won't happen in the future.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
And I always talk about that too. I'm like, the Nashville audience is so fucking weird here. It's just, it's suits with their arms crossed in the back and no one wants to be up front. And it's mm-hmm. like too cool for school. You can't cheer for something unless it's making you money. It's like, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But that's not how it is everywhere.
No. And it's, I mean, it's... like, again, the music business is run out of this town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, you know, mixing business with it definitely plays a factor in that. Whereas outside of here, it's just the people that are there are coming.
Because they love it.
Because they love it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I've been chasing shows outside of Nashville a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was back in Pittsburgh, we would drive to the Dusty Armadillo on a weekend to see a show, you know, in Ohio. And. You know, of course, like we'd anytime there was a country act, any day of the week, I would have a squad out at it.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't know if we were gonna like it. Like
for sure.
$20 ticket, $10 ticket, like let's go.
Dude,
you know?
And, like people like that are the most important thing to, you know, young touring artists.
Yeah.
Who are trying to get their name out there. Because, you know, relying on people that don't know who you are, that want to come out and see live music.
Yep.
And that's, you know, how you grow your fan base. And I think it's important for people to come out and, or to go out and see shows that they haven't seen before.
100%.
You know, you might find your next favorite band.
100%. You know? I mean, that's how Turnpike Troubadour changed me as a fan.
Yeah.
You know,
it's wild that you just stumbled upon that while you're in town one time.
We were looking for, we had a group of guys going to Chicago for the Penguins, a Pittsburgh guy.
Yeah.
We're playing an outdoor show. The stadium's outdoor uh-huh. in Chicago. And I'd been to Joe's on Weed Street because my buddy John lived in Chicago. And we were like, well, we should see if we can go to a show. And I was like, it's Turnpike Troubadours. And I was like, I don't know them. Let's look them up. And then my brain exploded.
Yeah.
You know?
And American Aquarium.
Oh,
holy
my
cow.
God.
What a lineup to go
ever.
See.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was 2015. I'm pretty sure it was 2015.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Turnpike was big, but they weren't like...
Yeah,
big,
they weren't
big,
like national,
you know?
Act.
Right.
Yeah.
They were, but Ed Warm knew Texas and he loved Texas music.
Uh-huh.
And so he put his money where his mouth was and brought it up to Chicago to, I think they said Chicago, I don't know if it still is, but they said it's like one of the biggest country markets on the planet.
I believe it.
Just because they have so many people and like the Midwestern folks love country music.
Yeah.
So
that's like the only like major city outside of Texas that we've like, continually go back to Chicago.
Yeah,
because
they love it.
They love it up there.
Yeah,
and it's a beautiful city too. I was blown away the first time I went to Chicago.
Yeah, I love Chicago. It's big. It's so big, but
yeah.
it also still has like sections, and it's like almost like little towns inside of
yeah,
the town. You know
sure.
what I mean? It's like,
and I grew, like growing up in Texas, you know, you hear all like the horror stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sure in the right parts of town are true, but
right.
we went up there and we were playing like up around like Wrigleyville somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's so nice.
Yep.
Like the town is, it's clean. It's beautiful.
It's fun.
The beach right here. Like,
yeah.
Oh, so much fun.
And like you talk about, like Steamboat, and mm-hmm. you know, Ed has built a haven up there
yeah.
of that scene, and it's not even just in his bars anymore. It's bled everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a cultural shift. It's cool though.
Yeah. It's great. It's great for the scene.
100%.
Yeah.
And it's because he loves real good music, and a lot of it comes from Texas.
Yeah.
You
know? Sure.
So God bless people for doing that.
Absolutely.
Or I would have at least not at the time known about Turnpike Tree Brewers.
Yeah.
You know, I get to tell all my friends about it. Well, man, thanks for hopping on the pod.
Absolutely,
with us,
man. Thank you for having me.
It's always a blessing when we get to have you come travel and hang out in Nashville.
Yeah, dude. And thanks for letting me, you know, hop up and sabotage the showcase every now and then.
Brother, anytime. When we have a stage and there's an opportunity, we'd love to have you whenever we can. Brother.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. Well, guys, make sure you follow up. We don't know a date on the record yet, but he's been dropping singles. And the singles are great, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you popping out here, and I'll take you back so you don't have to get an Uber.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Cheers.